You guys hear from something? We are going to start our work session. It is Tuesday, March 3rd at 6:05 p.m. And we are meeting in the CFO's meeting center. The only thing on our agenda for the work session is a discussion on the items for our regular agenda. So I will turn time over to Chandler.
Okay. I'll get through the other ones. They're faster. So as you know, the city does have water restrictions on even days, depending on the last digit of your home address. And council brought up the idea last fall, this winter, of developing a policy that incentivizes people to go out and purchase these smart irrigation controllers that regulate the based on the temperature that they regulate how much water is put on your lawn. And as an incentive, this would exclude them from those water restrictions. Staff put together a smart irrigation control policy draft that you have in the packet there. First, I want to talk a little bit about the smart irrigation controllers. The EPA has a website called WaterSense where they judge these controllers based on certain criteria that they have to meet. When they can meet these criteria, they're given this WaterSense logo on the box. And these are the same controllers that if you were to go to the Central Utah Water Conservancy District in Warren and file a rebate, these are the same controllers that they would use. So we would all be pulling these controllers from the same list. So these controllers, this is straight from the EPA website, and this is kind of surprising. The residential outdoor water use in the United States accounts for 9 million gallons of water each day. And mainly that's for landscape irrigation. So experts estimate that as much as 50% of this water is wasted due to overwatering caused by inefficiencies in irrigation methods and systems. So these inefficiencies, this is what these controllers are supposed to do, is to cover the gap between efficient and inefficient by saying we're not going to water on a hot day or on rainy days. We're going to water during times of the day that are most efficient. We're going to water based on what's actually being watered, whether it's grass in a sunny location, grass on a slope, trees, gardens, shrubs. You can program these controllers to know that kind of stuff based on the sprinkler zone. So these water-sensitive irrigation controllers, they act as a thermostat for your sprinkler system, telling you when to turn it on and turn it off. And they use local weather and landscape conditions to tailor the watering schedules to the actual conditions that you see in the environment. Instead of irrigating using a controller with a clock and a preset schedule. So the only problem I found with that, I have one of these in my personal home, and the problem with that is that some of our weather is so localized that what is happening here in Cedar Hills may not be what's happening in the nearest weather station. So for example, my home is, the nearest weather station is down by the lake, and it's very different climates and climates from I see my house to the weather station says. So you can also program these to go off local weather stations that are not tied to any official group.
Can the city become a weather station, the city office or something, or does it take to be a weather station?
How official will it be?
Just so that our controllers would be that weather station.
You can program a small computer to act as a weather station. It's not super accurate, and they won't list it as an official weather station. So in mine, I can show that some weekend warrior that's programmed their computer to act as a weather station. So I can tie into that information that they have. What I've seen is, you've seen a Raspberry Pi device. It's a little box. It's like a little computer. And it's meant for coding, it's meant for all sorts of fun projects. or one of the things you can do with it is you can create a weather station with it. So that's just an example of something. But so you can create one of these weather stations, and people can tie that information more locally. But if something were to happen, like if, let's say we're all into a bucket of water and think that it's raining, I don't know. But the information is not as good. So we haven't looked into becoming a weather station. I don't know what I don't know what the nearest weather station is to here anyway, so that's probably an issue to point out to. But any questions about the what a smart controller is? So
Chandler?
Yes.
So the city has smart controllers and they do work on the weather, local weather stations.
Do you know where that station is?
One that they use is at the Pleasant Grove Junior High.
Okay.
And then there's one in Highland, an underground weather station. And so ours are set up to monitor those two. If the city was to create a weather station, they would also need to create a web page or a contact where people can sign up to utilize that as part of their smart controller. But those are where ours are. That's okay. How far away they are.
We have one on our property, and we use the Pleasant Grove weather station as well.
It's okay. Been fairly accurate. Since you live in Pleasant Grove, you should
buy it. It's been years since I've looked into it, so I'll have to look for that one. So currently our rules, like I said, audio watering is based on your address number. We also don't allow watering on Sunday at all. And we do allow spot watering at close, that's culinary water, so that's different. But if you were to adopt a policy like this, I think that, and the draft policy doesn't say this, but I think that that would need to change. Because if you're going to allow the smart controller to act as a thermostat, watering when it needs it, should be regardless if it's on Sunday or if it's on Monday. So if you were to adopt this policy, I think that's something that you need to look into.
I understand that. I completely agree because I worry that if we exclude Sundays, it's then going to encourage people to manually override the system. If we want it to work based on weather patterns, we should just let it do the same.
Yes. But you also see throughout the city the enforcement measures is done by what call water czar, but it's just the teenager driving around, it's the vehicle. And they don't usually issue a ticket, they don't ever issue a ticket. They really just find the person, they put a notice on their door, and they write down the address, and Jenny takes that list and starts to create a spreadsheet showing who's been given one of these notices. And it's their first one, it's just a warning, it's the second one. It happens to find start. We do have some large open areas that are excluded from those watering restrictions, and they are typically HOA common areas because they cannot water all of their zones within 24 hours. So what we'll do is we'll set up a schedule with them that's approved by the city that allows them to water. So we exclude those common areas. And so those are approved by the city. And also the city, we try to be very cognizant about how we're watering, even though many of our systems are on the smart controllers, many are not. Some of the smaller zones are still regulated by just timers. And it, as a cost measure, it doesn't make a lot of sense to go and replace many of those. These smart controllers are tied to a city system that they, because they need power, they need cell service to connect to a weather station. They have to have a certain kind, and so basically you're paying for a cell signal on the cities. And they run for us, they're a few hundred dollars each, is that correct? How many dollars they are?
They are. I think we're right now, with the number we have, we do about $4,500 annually for the cell service to operate those for 6 months. They operate year round, but you can water for the 6 months.
So we'll get complaints from people that the zones that are on timers, the sprinklers will go off in the rain, and we spray in the road or spray during the rain. And we'll get complaints about that, but typically the sprinkler zone runs 15 to 20 minutes. For us to send out a guy to go turn that zone on and then go turn it back on just financially doesn't make a lot of sense for cell phones. So a lot of times we just have to accept those phone calls as complaints and say, try. But yeah, I'd like to hear your feedback on this proposed policy change and this direction. We do need to adopt something, we won't adopt anything before April 15th when the water gets turned on.
So I have a question about the fee, the annual fee. Like, Jay, you have this, and how much do you pay a year for your, do you have a cell service in it, or does it run off?
No, no.
Why, every time you?
At home, you're taking the, you're taking the power on the internet for your home, so you're not paying any fee. There's no annual fee.
You just got a device.
Yeah, ours are just, but not connected to a power source, because they're in the middle of the park, or they're in the middle of the road, or the park strip. So we, you have to pay extra for the battery and the cell service to get the signal.
So residential ones are not like that.
They're not like that.
And so you buy the smart controller, and if you buy one that's on the separate Utah water group site, you can turn it in for every week up to 50% of your purchase price as well, until they run out of money to do so.
Start with it.
So we have control over the wording on our notices. And I was thinking, I'm sure, especially since we're hiring teenagers to monitor this for their seasonal job, it's probably going to be challenging for them to have a list knowing who's got a smart controller and who doesn't. So what if we change the wording on the notice at the bottom to say, if you have registered your smart controller with the city, please disregard this notice. And if you want more information on the smart controller program, visit our website. And that might encourage people, if they don't have a smart controller and they get the notice, to go get them. And if people get the notice and they know they registered with the city, they're not going to call and be angry because they know that they're not going to, nothing's going to happen. It's a great idea.
And Jenny would know when she got it back.
She should be tracking on that spreadsheet. Yeah.
Yeah, so Jenny would take the spreadsheet of who got the notice and then say, match that up with who has gotten prior notices and who's exempt from the sex list. We can even do our best that as they come in, you can kind of highlight on maps. See that a lot of times it's challenging though, because a lot of times we're asking that individual to go out between 2 and 6 in the morning. So visually, it may be a little more difficult.
I think that would reduce phone calls that said on there.
Yeah,
and register it. Don't worry about this. And if you want to register or have this program, there's our website post. So we need to have a page that explains this policy and what it is.
Okay.
Which is, this is perfect.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me also add this though, just because I feel like this is important. In 2015, we instituted these water restrictions, and we haven't seen a precipitous decline in water use. I would say that it's not, the way that our watering restrictions work is not actually saving water. When we see savings in water, it is always weather related. So last year in the spring, we saved a lot of water in the first couple of months because were so wet, we didn't have to pump that much water. We didn't have to use allocation. We didn't have to use as much spring water. We were trying to just get rid of this water. But in dry season, it shoots up and there's about a 2-3% fluctuation, not a lot of fluctuation. I don't anticipate that this will move the dial anymore, but I do think that it emphasizes good behavior on the residents' part, at least looking at it.
And I disagree a little bit.
Okay.
So BYU did this study, and I sent that to you, where Spanish Fork already has water meters, and they have implemented a program where they are giving smart controllers for free to their residents because they wanted to reduce their water usage more than what they were seeing meters. And BYU did a study on that, just the smart controller implementation, and saw a pretty impressive reduction in usage when they added the smart controllers.
In conjunction with the meter, I think, and because there's probably also an accelerated pricing schedule that accompanies that on some level.
Possibly, but I think what Spanish Fork was seeing is the meters alone weren't getting them the results that they were looking for. But with a smart controller, because people don't just turn on their sprinkler system and walk away for the season because you've got, I mean, we're all busy and it's hard to remember to deal with it if it's raining or whatever, that takes a lot of that guesswork out of the equation. So I don't know, it could be very true that we don't see
any change. Well, I say that because there's So going back to some of the state legislation that is being, is only being proposed, is that the city has to account for all of this water that's outside the ground. And we can typically tell you how much we pump out, and then it gets into the system, and we don't know where it goes. I mean, you're sitting right now on a large gravel pit, and we could have a water leak that is losing hundreds of thousands of gallons every month, millions of gallons every month, and we don't know about it, because there's not a meter. We've had one of our large commercial users on their PI connection. Their culinary connection. They had a large leak. It has passed the meter, so they were paying for it. They fixed it, and budget adjusted is such a big number. Because they're all somewhere using too much water. So without knowing somewhere some of these deficiencies are in our system, there's probably, I like to think that these are just little sub that are drops in the bucket. I hope it goes the dial, but I'm skeptical.
What's the reason we don't have a meter?
Have a meter where?
Well, you're saying.
Well, we don't like our fluoride water. We have meters at the end user, so we know what we pump out, we know what goes into the system, so we know what passes, what we pump out, what passes through. So we know if there's a leak. But on the PI system, we know what we pump out, but there's not a meter on the end.
We don't have meters on the home.
There's no meters on the home, so we don't know. Oftentimes they manifest themselves spectacularly in the middle of the night, but most of the time we don't know.
So do you think, I don't know what it costs, would meters substantially, do you think that would substantially change?
I do think meters would substantially change, but I do agree with the mayor that meters with smart controller policy or smart controllers at each connection would really have to make a difference.
I'm going to add meters with a pricing structure that penalizes people who use too much.
Right,
yeah.
I don't know how you can do meters long term without adopting a price schedule. I mean, you can do it short term to do education, but then long term there has to be cost to using more water than you're supposed to.
Just like water.
Just like any utility.
So at some point we talked about turning on PI water later, turning it off earlier. Is that still not?
That's still something we adopt. That's something that staff will look at in the next month. We watch how wet or dry it is. We'll look and see. We'll come to the council and say this is what we're planning on doing. And yeah, the water after water season doesn't start until 2015. I mean, last year. We turned it on April 15th, even though really you didn't need the water last year until almost the beginning of June, so it went through April and May. But nonetheless, we will get calls that the water's not on April 15th that invites the price back for system work.
So what are the cons to the meters? Maybe I'm late. But
what are the cons to
meters? That's the con to do the meters spend. The
cost.
And the homeowners do that or the city does that?
The city.
The city, okay.
So it's cost and it's considerable pushback from people in the community who don't want to go that route.
But we do have them going on to new construction.
Yeah, that's required by law.
So, but even then, without a pricing structure that says if you use more than what's allotted,
then who cares?
There's really no consequence.
We just know how much we use.
Right.
So we'll just know how much they use. That's about it. Yeah. We can say you're using a lot.
It's not a lot of land of water.
Yeah, that's
interesting. Well, and the interesting thing about that combination with meters and smart controllers is meters have been required in California and Texas and some of the drier states. And the studies have shown over and over that you get in areas very similar to the higher socioeconomic area, and meters don't really move the needle much because if a person feels like that they need that, if the rest needs that, then they're going to pay for it. But you add that smart controller component where they're not having to deal with it, and it will turn off if there's rain, and it will only water when it needs to, and then you see that coming down. You get into areas where it's lower socioeconomic status, and then yeah, they're not using as much water because they can't afford the life to pay for the water.
Can I comment?
Please.
From our experience with the smart controllers, there's a device that attaches to them. It's a rain delay. It's just a small plastic cup that's on the outside of the building, connects to the smart controller. That has shown the biggest advantage in conserving water versus the online services, weather stations, because it does monitor their exact location. So if it rains, it turns their system off, and it will remain on until it determines it. It's usually like a 3-day delay, then it will start back up again. That has been our most effective method.
And that can plug into a lot of existing systems.
Yes.
Much cheaper than a smart controller.
Yes.
I see the one that I would buy would be like $50 for my home.
The Ring-X?
Yeah, the Ring-X, yeah.
Did you get rebate for that though?
I don't know. Does that have a water sense rating on it, the EPA, do you know?
I do not, no.
Let's find out.
So the big cost for us as engineers is that we have to purchase the actual device and then come over test to install them all. And then we have to collect this data every month and provide it somehow to our residents. As part of the law that we know eventually we're going to have to follow is not only are you installing the smart meter or the PI meters, but that you're providing regular education to your residents on how much they're using and helping them know how to reduce their usage. So it's being able to get that data, how we're getting that data, is it real time, is it whatever the case is. There's just a lot of cost.
Let me add to that there is a lot of cost. Like, you look at Butterfield, that's one center right now, or one of the stations right now, that requires meters within, like, 20 years, 19 years from now. Let's say that we took our time, we drug it out, we were going to install meters over the course of that entire 20 years. Well, we're spending $125,000 a year, like, based on our city and the number of connections, to do 5% each year and then meet that deadline in 2039. Well, what happens in 2039 is, yeah, we've installed the meters throughout the whole city, but now the ones we installed first are now in need of replacement. So it's an unfunded mandate from the state that the city will have to perpetually be paying for it. Okay? So that's why I say you can't really do it without a scheduled billing system that covers your costs there, because installing 5% of the meters, recovering that, getting the reads, reporting that to the residents does take time and effort on staff that we currently don't have.
So Jay still hasn't updated this only back to the instruction because they didn't have any money to put in the.
Yeah. And that's been the problem for year after year. There's no money from the state to grant. So
have we looked at, if we take the study from BYU and look at the cost savings that were projected in there, like what did they actually see? Would we be able to translate that over to our actual water rights usage and save some money there?
It'd be really hard to take their study and estimate what our savings would be, just because my impression of the city's water systems is they're also proprietary to that city. If you have next door Alpine, that all of their water comes downhill for them, they don't have to pump it, so just spring runoff where their springs are, because they're source. Ours is down here at the bottom of this hill, and we're pumping it clear up there and then bring it all the way back down. And so if you want to look at some crazy bills, look at our power bills from pumps to push the water up the hill, only to bring it down and have to run through a pressure reduction valve to slow it down because it's going so fast. So that's a problem that we have that Alpine doesn't have. I don't know if Highland has that same problem. It's unique to us. You know, Pleasant Grove has a bunch of their cold water, pressurized irrigation water comes from Barron Fork Canyon. They have Battle Creek Canyon, Grove Creek Canyon, and Dry Creek Canyon. And so a lot of theirs is gravity fed as well into tanks into the system. So really, I think we would have to have a unique look at our systems. We would have to come in and evaluate our system, our building system, and our business partner, our connection partner.
So I would assume that we would use less. We would see some amount of savings in there, but
depending on how
is it significant? I don't know.
Yeah. And it will also depend on how many people do it.
Yeah.
If only 20 homes sign up for the program.
Even if we do the metering, let's say we bond for metering, we get it all in, everybody sees what they're using, and all of a sudden they have to pay for it, and you see some sort of drop there. Mm-hmm. I would imagine we'd see some savings on our side too.
On the pumping costs, for sure.
Definitely on the pumping costs, but also kind of long-term maintenance, because one of the fears we have is that we're running water through our system in such a fast interval that it's really putting a lot of wear and tear on the system. If you remember looking at the Hansen Allen study from 2015, and they did a water model for our PI system, it's almost like our PI system is like a respiratory system. It expands at night and contracts in the day, and then come back and just doing this all through the summer. It's really hard. But during that time, our pumps are constantly going, trying to feed the system, feed the tanks, fill the tanks for the night, goes through the system at night, and then beats them again in the daytime. So it's a constant nonstop. It's a problem. And on maintenance too, not just the pump.
It's something that
we were required to last year, submit it to the state for their approval.
I think
what was the one that we approved? Was it the 5% of the year?
We put together a number of funds. We showed what it costs the city to do it 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, 20 years. So if you look in your packet for kind of reads over during the budget retreat, go back to that and show this there. But this should show the documentation. So we have, I think there's an updated version of it. But we showed all of what it would cost the state, what it costs the city to do it. But as far as the smart control policy, I'd love to hear any feedback that may have, and we'll form a special decision later.
I like the policy because I think it promotes good behavior, and even if it doesn't make things better, it's certainly not going to make things worse.
I agree.
And it doesn't cost money.
But I do think it's a step in the right direction. So eventually, when we are putting in those meters, I think that it starts to push people towards conservation. I don't think that this alone is going to do it, but I think this is one of the necessary steps.
Is there any program to make bulk purchases on these?
From the city's point of view?
To sell for our residents to get those other cheaper rates now?
No. In fact, you can actually find many of them fairly inexpensive, especially when you take into account the rebate, so you do not. I know there's even local companies that produce these. So you can get them for half the rebate, but really the same cost as a normal smart or just a normal sprinkler controller.
I think ours was about $100, and I think we got that back. And then last year, posted in the chat room on Amazon Prime Day, they had one of the approved ones for it was pretty inexpensive, and then about to put your rebate in, your out of pocket cost would have been $30. They're not crazy expensive.
The different amount of zones, right? Like each one.
Yeah. So obviously the price fluctuates based on the number of zones. So
right.
The most yards, I'd say, have 4 to 8 zones, not that many.
You might need more.
Yours is a little
unique. Like 85 controllers.
most lots, I would say, could be serviced by one.
I like it too from the standpoint of the education piece. I mean, we're gonna eventually do anything that's more like a meter and move people towards that. This is baby steps. That if there doesn't cost us anything, I think people feel better initially about getting on board by themselves, and then maybe we'll get quite a few people on board before we have to say, that was a great experiment. Love it. But
yeah. Well, one of the complaints that I get often, and it's usually from people who are trying to be responsible water users, and they generally already have a smart controller, is your city's policy forces me to use more water than I normally do anyways. I only want to water every 3 days, but you don't let me water every 3 days.
Yeah, right.
I have to water every other day.
Right.
Or skip. And so the people who are trying to conserve water are frustrated because our policy does kind of force them to use more than they would want. So this is us saying
that.
But yeah, this is us saying, if you have a smart controller and it's registered with the city, or we know to use you, then those will apply.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, so the changes I'm going to make is I'm going to incorporate some of the language directly from the EPA website about what a smart controller is, so you can understand that. I want to put it on the website. I want to exclude Sundays and allow them to water on Sundays. And then just when we're talking about some of these common areas that are water that may be off, it may seem like off, but the city doesn't do those, so people can be going on the city.
I would also, in the bottom, put a link to Central Utah Water where they can do the rebate.
Okay, that's right.
We won't have anyone on Sundays to monitor that, right?
No, we have some, that's the best day for them to drive around.
That's what I was going to say, that's going to be fine picking.
In the past, anybody that's watering.
That would be a good education day.
So,
we
could have them drive around Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
and then just the wording on the notes.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question that's not really related to this, but sort of? You know, we get our emails with the city newsletter every time. Is there a way that we track who's, how many people are opening their newsletter? Yeah.
We do.
Do we know what the, what percentage of residents?
It's been a while since I've looked at it, but I want to say it was, it's probably been a couple of years since I've looked at it, but it's actually fairly high. It's actually my personal stuff, and that's when we looked into this, and I want to say it was somewhere in the 60% range of the newsletter.
And on the weekly, we can see what leaks they actually put on.
Yeah.
That would help.
We found that when we put a title, rather than just Cedar Hills Weekly Update,
right.
Put a title in.
Like Mayor Plows.
People are like, what is she doing now? She made an awesome video.
Yes.
Can you talk about the rebrand?
Oh, yes.
I showed it to my family too, my husband who loves it all.
You've seen some of the staff suggestions. We've kind of just been toying with the idea, and that is not the same. So, kind of some of the reasons that I think, and Greg, please feel free to interject if you want to add anything or say Kelly or whatever. So, some of the reasons I, in my conversations with Greg and all parts of why we want to rebrand is, and these are just, this also some of my own perceptions, is one, to give the course kind of a fresh look. I've talked to a number of people over the years of working with Cedar Hills that associate the golf course with the contention in the city over the years. They also associate it with the trailer that was here for a number of years. We operated the pro shop at the trailer. They also associated with the, what did we call it, tent?
Smelled like sunset room.
Sunset room. It was a nice room, but you walked in and it smelled like black mold. So it was bad. So there's some of these perceptions that people have from the course from years ago, so it's to maybe give them a bit of a fresh look. It's also to design a logo to the golf course that's a little bit less ubiquitous. Trees are, like you see the city logos are everywhere. They're not in so to kind of give the Cedar Hills logo a look that's kind of its own. And then what we're doing tonight is we want to look into the logo, but also get some of the buy-in from the stakeholders, which is for you. And then kind of give you some of the history. We've gone and looked for some other golf courses for some inspiration. Wade has talked about, he likes the idea of more of an abstract design for the golf course, and we'll show you what has been drawn up. But some of the rules, I'll say rules might be too strong, but some of the guidelines I gave the staff on this was, even though you want to move away from Cedar Hills tree logo, the golf course, it still has to say Cedar Hills. The golf course is Cedar Hills golf course. On some level, it is Cedar Hills. So it has to reflect the values of our organization. And that might be challenging to say that in the golf logo, but we do want it to be something that we can look at and say, yeah, that's something that Cedar Hills is getting. So Greg met with Chase Media Group, and they just did some mock-ups for the group, for the golf logo, and they put it, they was really cool. They put it on the hat and some shirts that you guys see what it looks like in the real world. Did you see these already, Mike? Okay, let's look at them. So the first one is an abstract with trees that was drawn up.
Looks like the Forest Service.
Well,
that was my first one. I was going to say what comes to my mind.
They did. So then they have some other trees that they were using. But you can see that they I think trees, it's a different kind of tree, but it still says Cedar Hills golf club. Throw it on a hat, throw it on a shirt, give it the negative space on a shirt, and that's what you got. Second option still incorporates trees, but also incorporates the canyon that we're so fond of. But it still says Cedar Hills, shows golf club, they have golf clubs in the logo, a variant of it, and then see what it looked like on a hat, on a shirt. Then they kind of went for some new looks. CH, but it still says Cedar Hills, but you have the golf tee forming part of the H. Variant of that again, kind of see some variations that they proposed, about half, not sure, that's either their own. The second option of something new is just the processes. It says, it still says here, most of all, but they all do. And once again, it's kind of a variation. Then, they use the point of the idea of changing the name of the golf course, it's a big part to reflect the people that you hold 15.
Every 14, year. 14, sorry.
14. The people that animals that you hold 14. To you, it's horns.
That one is way too favorite, I'll say.
I was just about to ask, so what are you guys leaning towards?
What do you like, Greg?
Personally, I kind of like the first one. Just
the Forest Service one.
Forest abstract, yeah.
I
don't mind the CH with the T in it either. That's fine.
So is this all of them?
That's all of them. Yeah. This one, to me, looks more like a Dodge logo.
It really does. So.
I really like the mountain one just because we're one of the few courses my husband mentioned that's in right up on the hill, you know? So.
If I were to rank them, I'd agree that that was first, and the other one would be first one would be second.
So the mountain one first and the tree second.
I like the one with the mountain and the tree.
The other one with the mountain trees.
I do too.
That'd be not my number one choice.
I like the, well, this is to be tacky, but I like the word golf club.
The only thing is, we don't have a lot of pine trees, but maybe those could be like on a pine.
We don't have a lot of pine trees. We used to. When I arrived here in 92, there were a lot less of the trees.
This still just looks like the mountain to me. I just feel like if that looks like more specific to what our looks like, instead of just the rest of them should be any golf course.
It was pretty good.
Even though
it's
good.
The tree that's
I like that it has the established date of the course right there on it too.
Yeah, I feel like that one too.
Oh, that's pretty cool. But there's a different tree. There's another tree they
can. Yeah, so there's different trees that they can, and obviously that can be with you even more. I know Wade really likes the big horn. Gretchen ruined it for me.
She did, like,
you know, if I can be honest,
she called it fallopian tubes.
He asked Chase Media, who does a lot for us, their thoughts on changing the name. And just to be brutally honest, they said, unless you're going to put more of an effort into it or advertising into it, step up and maybe have a starter on the first hole. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
Which I completely agree with. You know, we've had a lot of issues with concessions. I think that would go with it too. I don't think we're there yet. And I know I can't say that Wade's not going to agree with that, but I'm just being realistic.
Yeah, I agree.
Until we step up to that real country club mentality, I think it's a big step to make, and it's going to be just a waste. I mean, I worked at Chili's forever, and it used to be Chili's. And then they converted to the Pepper. That's what they're known for. There's a transition, like I mentioned in the retreat. And I think that's what they're known for now. And we could do the same thing. And the one thing that we were really trying to get away from, too, is about 8, 9 years ago, the golf course was known as a dump. You know, until Brian got here, and really, so a little bit longer than that. It took some time for him to convert it to what it is now. And those people that just refuse to come here, you know, just to get them out and draw. And I think with the recession possibility, I think a little spark like Fox Hollow went through a couple years ago was huge. And it kind of helps draw more people in.
I was going to bring up Fox Hollow. It's taken a long time for that rebranding to. People still refer to it as Tri-City, so.
I still call it Tri-City.
It's been a long time. I don't know, has it been 10 years since it's been Fox Hollow's? At least.
Probably close to 10 now, yeah.
I mean, it takes a long time to try to rebrand it to a big horn thing or something like that.
Yeah, and they did that too because they have Fox there on their course. You probably see that too. So that's what our thinking was with the big horn at Cedar Hills Golf Club. So, I mean, really what we're looking for is what you envision for us. Because as I mentioned, the retreat, we can do this for cheap, and we would just do this in over time because we've already got stuff for this year. But it'd be nice to get something going. As I mentioned too, our golf carts just arrived. We didn't put logos on there yet until we make a decision. So we don't want to do it, take it off, do it again. They're gonna do it for us when we make a decision. So we're not in a huge rush, but you know, we just want some direction.
Yeah, I think that's a good I don't like the name change, but other than that, I don't have a preference.
I have a sense come around to do this the same as Mayor. I'm not terribly in favor of name changes. I think that there's going to be a lot done with the sewer bills.
And I agree, and that's why I mentioned, I think, you know, I value the input that Chase gave us, they're very frank, and I appreciate that.
That's a good partnership we have. So.
Changing the logo is awesome.
So we're not changing the logo of the city.
Just the logo.
I need to reiterate that, because we tried that once, and I didn't realize how passionate people were about the trees.
Stop the rock. I've never tried that.
Wait, just for.
Did you show them the trees in 13?
15, I think. That's why I'm looking at the one.
What were the other options for logos?
We have still some.
I'll show you tomorrow.
They weren't like this, were they?
No, no, they weren't.
Was it just angry letters?
There was one that was a lot like Canyon, but, no, they were different.
So feedback from you to take back and talk to the guys about is just stay away from the big horn, but yet everyone's open to whatever.
That's my opinion. I don't know anybody else, but everybody, I need this after that.
I would pick the logos out first, and then this geometric tree option second.
Okay, that's good to go.
And I agree, I mean, I'm not a strong fan either, I take either one of them, so.
Yeah.
You guys feel like I'm just better than the others. We leave it up to them, pick one or two.
We'll work with staff.
Yeah.
It's what we got to do, we'll work on it.
Are the colors, could this be the green and the brown?
I'd like them to be, still kind of tied in the city in that manner.
Certainly better, easier to logo on shirts and hats, and they'll stand out better too.
Yeah. The tree just gets so enticing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just.
When we embroider our logo on shirts and hats, it just bunches everything up, it's just a hybrid count, but kind of dangerous shirts we got.
Would you like it if we put a little big horn on the mountain instead of the tree? Would that help at all? Kind of compromise?
A little five and a big horn. It's 6:48. You okay, Ethan? Okay, I'll take a motion to adjourn work session.
I will move that we adjourn work session.
Okay, Councilmember Anderson, is there a second?
Second.
Second, Councilmember Smith, all is in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned in session.